sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Lighters in the air, lighters.
T'auras qu'à faire semblant de rien.
All right, stop. What the 24 seconds. Yeah, y'all can't sue me for playing 24 seconds of a song, can they? Oh, the white man will do what the white man will do. All right, okay. Hey. Don't go yet. Welcome. You're at the right place. Welcome. Bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. B Plus, a.k.a. B Blizzak on Twitter, and Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web. Hey, FYI, quick reminder, another reminder for you returning listeners. This podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Gucci Blizz up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé Québec, and Much Music. Excuse me, and Soul in the City on Much Music. I'm gonna get this right at some point. This episode is being recorded today on August 7, 2022 at 5:22 p.m. and is brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. All right, that was not bad. Okay, all right. Let's just jump into it, man, instead of... You know what? Hold on. I'm going to write the word be black bridge words. I'm trying to work on my bridge words on this podcast. I don't know. I do better on comedy than I do better on stage managing my bridge words than I do on this podcast. And I don't know what that's about, but if you don't know what a bridge word is, it's see what I just did there, I think it's my brain trying to process something and in the meantime throwing something up my mind up my mouth to make sure I don't know, it's a bad habit. It's just a habit. For some people are used to it, some people it's a turnoff when they're listening to you. But one thing's for sure, if you want to make your shit sound professional, or you want to sound professional, get rid of bridge words. Make it sound like you're managing your thoughts. See that pause I just did? Instead of saying, I just put in a pause. But yeah, all right, okay. How you doing? How was your week? I'm buying time. Oh, right, I'm buying time as I click on the tab where all my notes are. Okay, how would I define my week? You know what, I'm just going to jump into the segment and let this podcast, describe my week as it's going. But yeah, all right, so today's... Oh, before I get into the title of this episode, I have to, it's something that I missed on the last podcast episode, and I forgot to say an RIP to Nichelle Nichols. For most of us, she was known to us as Lieutenant, Uhura, yeah, on Star Trek, and she died at 89. And the story that's going around about her, well, okay, you know, if you see, if you're a Czechie, that, you know, that's a loss. That's something worth recognizing. And the other thing too is, I didn't know this. Well, okay, real quick. She passed away when I recorded the last episode. That's why. And I remember putting in agenda. Like, I remember going through, working on my notes for the episode and seeing the news. And I meant to mention it, but of course I forgot. But so here's written out to recognize. So I won't go into details, but yeah. So it's a black woman, and she played in a sci-fi flick. And as a black person, we're used to watching sci-fi movie and no black people being around. As if it's like white people, like low-key trying to tell us that, hey, in the future, you niggas won't be around. But yeah, shout out to her, because like, I don't know how she came to the decision to be on Star Trek, but I knew there was a point where she was thinking of quitting, and who talked her out of it was Martin Luther King. Turns out that Martin Luther King was into sci-fi, and yeah, I remember reading this book about him. It was actually in French, and he talked about how he liked to watch movies. And it made me think that, hey, maybe I could be the next Martin Luther King, because I like watching movies too. No, I got the impression that Martin Luther King was like an introvert, or yeah, and he like consumed art, and he's just one of those people that when he speaks, he's got something to say. Like, he's not usually the talker in the group, but when he speaks, people are like, oh, 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 shut the fuck up. Dr. Martin Luther King is talking. Yeah, anyways. Yeah, so RIP to Nichelle Nichols, and thank you for your contribution to us geeks, man. To the world, fuck it, to the world. All right, Semblant de Rien. My choice of today's title for this episode is linked to actually a song by Linda Lemay, French-Canadian artist, du Québec. Elle vient du Québec, right? And and this is funny. This is like, this is a reminder that, hey, be black. This is your podcast. Do the fuck what you want to fucking do. And I'm laughing because my dad, I was with my dad yesterday, and I was driving. He overheard that I was listening to some slow French music. It was a love song. And he has no idea that I'm into that shit, but he was like kind of surprised. So it's like your regular hip hop bullshit and whatnot. Or he doesn't talk like that. He didn't say that, but he was just surprised. But what got me more about the conversation is I learned through that exchange that he was also into lyrics, because he was like absorbing the song, and he just turned to me and said, I don't believe you're listening to this shit. I forget the name of the song we were listening to, but he like, I didn't realize that he was big on, he paid attention to lyrics like I did, so I thought that was a nice moment. But all right, getting back, right. So probably some of you are surprised that, what the fuck you listening to this soft shit? Because that's what I do. That's what I like. I'm into deep songs, songs that make you feel shit. And I don't know, this song hit me. I can't remember where I heard it, when I heard it. I just know that when I heard it, two thoughts went. Is one, is like, fuck, I need to listen to more French music because these motherfuckers have things to say. And two, shit nearly made me cry, man. This song nearly made me cry. So, Semblant de Rien, let me, yeah, and one more note about this segment is I'm realizing just for this, like, I haven't decided whether my audience is going to be all English people, and if I do talk about French content, I'm going to just translate for them, or whether my audience is going to be a bilingual audience, or whether I want to include French people, you know, French-only people to listen to my show. And but for this episode, I'm going to talk about a French song, and I'm explaining it to my English friend, to my friend who speaks English. So I will, you know, throw in some translation. And so the assumption is that if you're listening to this, you're one of those tech carries who only speak English. So I'll cut you some slack. So to explain, so Semblant de Rien. Oh, I said so a lot, didn't I? Okay, fuck it. Excuse me. Woo, we're off to a bad start. Yeah, Semblant de Rien. The expression, it's an expression, and it means, god damn it, don't you hate when you're trying to see a website and you're getting ready to see the definition and it hits you with, hey, this site uses cookies and your mama doesn't, and whatever, it's just annoying, whatever. Okay, so what la définition de Semblant de Rien is être indifférent, agir comme si rien n'était. I'm gonna translate my own way, and all you Francophones can jump in, but actually don't, because I won't give a fuck. But yeah, I think to me it's just a woman who just stopped giving a fuck. It's let me go through the notes before I re-repeat my things and sound confused. Okay, it goes, oh, person listened to the song. Yeah, the song moved me. Okay. So the idea of reaching the portion of the, oh yeah, okay. So the song is about, is a woman who's reached a point of the relationship where she gave it her all and she stopped giving a fuck. It reminds me of a friend who was telling me how, who got a divorce with his wife, and he told me how something he learned, there's something about women. I'm not sure if it's just specifically the women, but I can relate to being in that situation, is where for some people, apparently mostly women, is when they're in a relationship, they'll give it your all, they'll be all loving-dovey and whatever, but when you keep fucking up as the partner, they reach a point where it's like, fuck it, they stop caring. They stop caring, and everything after that point is just like, it's a decline. One song by Jamie Foxx, he's got it, it's called just, I Was Kissing You Goodbye. So yeah, for you, it all seems like everything is fine. She's she's no longer arguing with you anymore. And like, holy shit, yo, my man, this chick is giving me a lot of chances and shit like that. But you, unbeknownst to you, is that part of her that was attached to you is like gone, and it's just a countdown. They're just downhill, and finally, when they reach a point where they can't spark that love anymore, it's over. It's like, and you're in your mind, you're thinking everything was great. And then finally, when she's like, yo, I want to go my separate ways. And you're like, no, let's straighten it out. And the reality is, the time to have straightened it out was that time when I decided to, like, this relationship was on a decline. So yes, this song is a powerful song. It's about a woman who's past the point. Love don't live here no more. This is the equivalent of R. Kelly's song where the woman's fed up. Erykah Badu's Better Call Tyrone. All those love songs of a woman saying, you know what, fuck it. Like, indifferent. And I gotta say, it's not that she hates the guy. It's just like, I guess the love is gone. Is, yeah, you reach the point where you're just, you're like a grain in the sand to me, man. Indifferent. I have no idea why this, yeah. And so that's the thing. I have no idea why this song is like, touches me emotionally, but I guess it must be just the idea. I'm sad for both the woman singing this song, because it means she had to go through, I can tell, even by the lyrics, or not just by the lyrics, okay, by the lyrics and human and experience, that she went through a whole lot of shit before she decided to get to the point to reaching this point. And on the flip side, for the guy who doesn't realize, for the guy who's like experienced, okay, usually what happens is if what she says is true, this guy never gave a fuck in the first place, then, you know, fuck it, she's doing him a favor. Or if this guy is one of those people who just basically straight up fucked up. And for them, it's like a complete surprise. Look, this song had me thinking about, I had a list of three things that made me think. It made me think about a particular relative who his woman reached that point. It made me think of, yeah, a woman fed up. And the last one was, yeah, life. Okay, I'll make the 3 points. Okay, so for the first one, this particular relative, the woman, his girlfriend dropped him because out of lack of a better, no, I mean, there's no way to say it like this. I'm not going to identify the relative, but the long story short, she realized she could do better than a man who not only cheats on her, but hits her. Now, it's fucked up. Yeah, I don't like admitting that. But yes, no, I had a relative who used to peed on his girl. And I remember this happened to me as a teen. And at that time, I was on that family first. So on one end, I understand why she had to make that decision. You're like secretly high-fiving her for making that decision, because yeah, she's right, she did. Like, I was like, the more I think about the story, even now thinking about it, like, I was so proud of her for reaching that decision. But on the flip side, this was a relative, And I grew, was raised on the idea that family is family regardless, no matter how much they fuck up. Like, I don't know, if one of my relatives was to shoot up a school, does family is family still stand up? But I don't know, whatever, right? So I was on his side, and I can see the one who got dumped, his heartbreak. I can sense how he was going through some shit, like the her breaking up. I think it was like twofold for him, because it would bother him to think. One is the rejection, the girlfriend leaving him. And the other thing is realizing that he broke the promise of never being like his father. I think that also fucked with him. But I remember like that moment of shit, like all his tactics, everything he used to do to get her back. To like, you know, to like, every time he would fuck up, he'd have a way to be like, oh, come on, baby, shit, you know, forgive me. And when all those tactics didn't work, it's like it destroyed him. And I don't know what that's about. I don't know if it's a control thing, but part of his heartbreak is the idea that, yo, she wants nothing to do with me. Like, it's wild how he pushed her to that point. And once she reached that point, it's like he's surprised that, hey, why you weren't trying to leave? I don't know. I can't explain that mentality, but I don't have the doctorate, but it is weird. It's like there are some, I was going to say men, but there's some people who are like, who get into relationships and for some reason push their partner past the point where the partner is like, all right, fuck it, I'm gone. And then you're surprised that it happened. Reminds me of that verse by Jay-Z on Song Cry, where he says, you don't do shit like that. I'm a man with pride. You don't do shit like that. You don't leave up and leave and leave me sick like that. What else did he see? Basically, I was just fucking these girls. I was going to get right back. I guess maybe it's the pride part. Maybe that's what fucks with the pain. It's like, they believe they were in this indestructible world. Like, you know, I can treat this person like shit and they'll never go away. And once they leave, they go away, they're surprised. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's, I can't explain. I just know that what breaks my heart is, like, maybe it's just the shit that the woman had to go through to finally reach that point. And for the other person who just thought it couldn't happen, and then it's happening. And who here's hoping that they learn from this particular mistake. But with that said, right? So high five for Linda LeMay. I'm not sure she's speaking out of, if this is like personal experience or she's, I don't know. You know what? I purposely didn't look up this artist. I mean, I probably read a quick Wikipedia entry on it, right? But I was scared to Google her name. And then, you know, because, you know, French Canadians, don't get me wrong, you know what I mean? I'm used to being disappointed by them, like Googling and finding out that she was like pro convoy or said some racist shit. We love Gigi, but likely, no, I love me, you see, qui ferme la, you know what I mean? Like, I was, so I didn't want to Google, I didn't want to find too much out about this artist and then being disappointed, because I just want to stick to her work right now. Just wanted to. So, yeah, I don't know the context. I didn't follow any interview on why she wrote this song, but I'm just going to stick to this art and how it makes me feel and the beautiful, yeah, aspect of it. Yeah, so what was I again? Yeah, so why the powerful song, and let me go through my notes here. What I wanted to say. Yeah, this is a new thing I'm trying here. It's notes. Okay, yeah. I wrote down like bars in the song, like verses that I really like. It goes, mes réponses à je t'aime. Fuck. What do I mean? Sorry. Turns out I haven't memorized this whole song. So what I did is I listened to the song before this episode, and I wrote down some of my favorite verse, but I'm like, I'm trying to remember. Mes réponses à... Oh, right, okay. So there's going to be a lot of paraphrases, right? Is, I guess she was saying how she starts out with the weird saying, like, t'auras rien à faire semblant. Hey, let me bring up the lyrics so I don't completely butcher this great song, the verse. So she said, les paroles... Hey, when you, oh, perfect, okay. T'auras qu'à faire semblant de rien. Ça devrait pas te causer de problème. Tu l'as toujours fait tellement bien comme réponse à mes je t'aime. There we go. All right, so basically she's saying that, hey, you're going to have to like act like this shit. You're going to have to act indifferent about this. You know what I mean? But then again, this whole relationship, you've been acting like you haven't been giving a fuck. Especially every time I've been trying to say I love you. You've been like treating me like, you can tell this motherfucker's been taking this poor woman for granted. Yeah, it also reminds me of certain people that I used to work with, or people that I used to know, and they were talking about, and they were fucking nonstop, wouldn't stop complaining about their wives. And here's the thing, for me as a single guy, every once in a while, there's certain things they would say about their girlfriend, wives, whatever, that would make me say, like, there'd be like one guy, he wouldn't stop complaining about how his wife is a bad cook. And I'm like, whoa, someone is willing to cook for you? Like, that's the thing that, like, it's a gesture that someone is willing to cook for you. Or I don't know. But just, oh, fuck, this bitch is calling too often. Oh, someone's giving a fuck about you? You know what I mean? It's like, it was just, okay, I'll keep going. All right. So, yeah, one part where I knew, like, one of the bars where I knew that, yo, this is about a woman who used to love this man. Or who loved this man, and love gone. And she says, t'as jamais dormi comme il faut. And the way it goes is, basically she's saying, hey, don't forget, because I'm be gone. Since I'm gone, you're going to have to handle a lot of this shit by yourself. You're going to have to take care of yourself. And she's leaving notes about shit that, if I'm not there, you're not going to do by yourself. Like, hey, you have a doctor's appointment on Wednesday. Hey, this particular shirt, you gotta wash at comment's delicate en anglais, light, fragile, basically. Yeah, don't. But giving instructions, like she's just as well as saying, hey, yeah, when you go to the grocery aisle, like all your shit is in aisle number 5, whatever, shit like that there. But the one that really got me the most was, she goes, when you go to bed, don't forget to close the curtains because the light fucks up your ability to sleep. Like, when a woman remembers small details about you like that, that's motherfucking love. That's look, all I'm saying is, look, man, when a woman loves you so much, that much to that point, the least you can fucking do is reciprocate. And if you can't, then walk away, man, walk away. But don't drag her through the dirt and put her in this bullshit situation, or I don't know, man. I guess the song just reminds me of, like, fuck how people can be shitty with each other. So what else she says? How I won't be there to nag you. Again, this is all me paraphrasing. This one, another heartbreaking line. She goes, t'as toujours vécu pour que toi, et tu te foutais de ma gueule. Yeah, you've always been a selfish motherfucker and you never really gave a fuck about me. One last one. Fuck this one too. Is, yeah, you can tell your homies, again, paraphrasing, you can tell your homies whatever the fuck you want about why we broke up. Tell you what, tell them that I was a dumb bitch and you kicked me out. I don't care. And what was the last one? And yeah, this shit is probably a sad story, but I'm keeping it to myself. And dire adieu sur, the last verse of the song, and she goes, I'll read it in French. It was, t'auras qu'à faire comme moi et dire adieu sur le même ton que lorsqu'on disait à demain. Holy shit. Yeah. So in French, there's a word for see you later, and then there's adieu. To God. How do we say that? It doesn't matter, right? But there's a huge difference. When you tell someone, you know, on se voit, see you later, you know, you have expectation of seeing again. But when you say it adieu, that means it's over. Like, fuck that. It's like, to God. See you in hell, motherfucker. Yeah. And, yo, man, okay, look. Overall, very powerful songs. Very dope shit. The song plays, and, like, there was a time where I just kept listening to it that it lost its effect on me, so I couldn't hear it. And then recently I bumped it again, and it just hit me. It hit me again. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think I'm going to make this a continuing segment. Just like one reason why I chose to make the title of that song the title of this episode is just because I wanted to have a French title for once. Last week it was supposed to be Kalash is chargé, which is my machine gun is charged, it's loaded. But yeah, today I'm picking this love song. And yeah, man, I don't know, man. If you're into French music and if you're into French love song, you know what? I would really like to hear your thoughts on this one, man. I would really, how you interpret it. Another thing I like about these, I like songs where I don't find myself. Okay, let me put it this way. When I have anyone show up to me and start complaining about their breakup, I stop myself from passing judgment because I'm like, okay, I need to hear what the other person is saying. Assuming that, you know, it's yeah, for the most part, I'm like, before I pass judgment or say anything, throw in my opinion on this relationship, I need to hear what the other person is saying. With that said, this was one of those songs that's how you reach me when I'm like, when you got me crying and saying, man, fuck that guy, man. When you got me like high-fiving you, thinking, yo, girl, you did the right thing, man. That motherfucker did not deserve you. Shit like that. Yeah, that's how you know you got a good love song. That's how you know that, you know, you those lyrics were the bomb. Right. You know, I should have written down a way to conclude this song, this segment, but I'm going to leave it at that. Leave it at that. All right, okay. Boom. All right, I used up a good 20 minutes. All right, let me roll through. I didn't have a lot going on this week or worth. Like, usually my agenda is packed, and I'm trying to find things to take off to so it won't be long. But so this episode won't be me rambling on some bullshit. But I guess that's what I like. But this song was like on my mind. Sambla de M was on my mind a lot this week. All right, for my This Week in Therapy segment, I'm just gonna read off something I found on Instagram, and it's by someone I follow. His name is Biggs Berkey. He's a friend of Talam Acey, and I like this. And he just says, "Stop trying to defend yourself to these toxic people. They already know you're right. They just want you to go insane, proving it." I bring this up because I think a lot about how I am so used on dealing with toxic people that even when they're not around, I still feel like I'm dealing with them. Like, for an example, like this podcast I'm recording, in my mind, my back of my mind, there's a toxic person getting ready to pounce on what I'm saying and you know, talk shit about, oh, fuck you, you're gonna make a song about a love song, or you don't talk about your emotions or shit. You know, I'm just so used on talking to people who have no intention of giving any values to what you're saying, and it's just about them making themselves feel better. So yeah, I think that's why I love this quote. So yeah, beautiful. Let's move on. All right, okay, B. You know, maybe I should start listing out everything I'm going to talk about, but it's in the show notes. You'll be able to see. So let's jump to a TikTok clip that really got me, and it's called Seven Things That Are More Important Than How Much You Love Your Partner. All right, I'm just going to play it right now. We'll take it from there.
Seven things that are more important than how much you like your partner. First off, I love that you like your babe, and I bet they like you too, but mutual like or love will only get you so far. So ask yourself the following. One, how do they treat you? Are they nice, kind, sweet, and caring, or are they bullies that are mean and make fun of you? Two, do you feel safe and secure enough to be your authentic self, or are you only showing certain parts of yourself and hiding others? Why are you doing that? Three, are your hopes and dreams and future goals being supported? Because this is a major part of a healthy relationship. Four, do you feel like your emotional needs are being met? Do you feel seen, understood, and supported? Or are you holding things back because they don't know how to show up for you? Five, are you able to say no and create boundaries without being made to feel guilty or selfish? Six, are you ever being coerced or forced to do something you're not consenting to? Even if you're in a relationship, enthusiastic consent is still required. Seven, after an argument, are you able to repair, reconnect, and feel resolved, or are you left feeling emotionally battered and exhausted? Seven things that are more important than how much you like.
All right, okay, let me try that again. Okay, so part of my homework, I didn't do this, but I'm realizing that I really need to write this shit down. So I'm going to play this again.
Your partner.
But not, because, okay, the first one I got is, number one is how do they treat you? How do they treat you? Yeah. Anyone else using Grammarly? Yeah, Grammarly's is kind of annoying because it keeps going red bars all over the place. And sometimes it's not a mistake. It's just the way I want to fucking express something. But Grammarly doesn't have the whatever. There's a lot of red bars on underscores. And some it's driving me fucking nuts. All right. So number one was, how do they treat you?
First off, I love that you like her, babe. And I bet we're live. Love will only get you so far. So ask yourself the following. One, how do they treat you? Are they nice, kind, sweet, and caring, or are they bullies that are mean and make fun of you? Two, do you feel safe and secure enough to be your authentic self?
All right, that's what the part I missed. Okay, very important. Do you, putain male, feel safe and secure to be your authentic self? Very good. All right. What's number three?
Self, or are you only showing certain parts of yourself and hiding others? Why are you doing that? Three, are your hopes and dreams and future goals being supported?
Okay. Number three, are your hopes and dreams being supported? And then,
because this is a major part of a healthy relationship. Four, do you feel like your emotional needs are being met?
All right. Do you feel like your emotional needs are being met? It's kind of funny that I'm doing this after the Semblant de Rien song. It's actually whatever. Okay, so number five.
Feel seen, understood, and supported, or are you holding things back because they don't know how to show up for you? Five, are you able to say no and create boundaries without...
Okay, perfect. Five is, are you able to say no and create boundaries, and six...
without being made to feel guilty or selfish. Six, are you ever being coerced or forced to do something you're not consenting to? Even not if that. You're in a relationship, enthusiastic consent is still required. Seven, after an argument, are you able to repair, reconnect, and feel resolved, or are you left feeling emotionally battered?
All right. After an argument, are you emotionally... Hold on. I'm going to play this for the people who want to hear this, and plus I'm...
and exhausted.
One more. Mail.
After an argument, are you able to repair, reconnect, and feel resolved, or are you left feeling emotionally battered and exhausted? Seven.
Okay. Beautiful. Like love. Oh, wow. Man, I guess I should mention the name of the artist. Oh, shit. Woohoo. My bad. The name of the TikTok content creator, his name is, Therapy Jeff. I don't know why TH fucks with me in the English language. Yeah, so Therapy Jeff on TikTok. Check him out. What do you mean I'm not following him? Oh, my God. Okay, well, we're going to fix that. Follow. My bad, bro. Okay, follow him. Yeah, man. Anyway, that dude's got some dope-ass content. And, yeah, leave it at that. So, for me, the you're probably wondering, hey, B, why are you listening to this shit? You're not even in a relationship. Well, here's the thing. The reason why this particular clip got my attention is because it reminded me on how this applies to family members, to relatives. Now, I have relatives who, if I, these seven questions, would have gotten a no on all of them. And it hit me that, so the two groups of people who I can would have failed would be that and every relationship I've been in. And it would make sense that I would be that I would end up in relationships where with people who would fail this test because I was born into a family that were people who failed this test. Now I gotta be careful. I'm not trying to say my whole families are shitty people, but I'm saying in terms of the nucleus, mom, dad, and mom, dad, and brother. Mom and dad likely didn't have their definition of relationship is probably as long as you're not dying, you're good. As long as you're being provided with the you know what it is the Maslow table of needs. is as long as you're provided, let me make sure that I get this right, with the first two, Maslow table of needs, right? Okay, and what is it? Yeah, okay, so I'm gonna read that. Psychological needs, safety needs, love and belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. So in their, they come from a world where love is physical needs, addressing your physical needs, but even though, but you know, but if, you know, if your uncle touched you, then don't talk about it. Safety needs, that's in there. You know, they, you know, but like if you, they saw me getting bullied, they would, you know, fuck somebody up too. But love and belonging, see, that's a tough one because we all don't have our, we all have, I guess, our own love languages and stuff. Like, I remember growing up with the notion that I was too needy, too sensitive, too this and whatever. But it, when the reality is, my understanding of love and belonging was just different from theirs. Esteem, self-actualization. It's not, it's things that for them, it's, you know, all you need is Jesus in their mind. So that's, it would make sense that this is why when you're going into a relationship, it's, you need to value, you need to take some time to do some self-assessment and what you consider to be love, because, you know, because that miscommunication with your partner, because what you think is love, your partner might think is, oh, fuck, you're being needy, or you're being too much, or you're being whatever. And I'm not saying this as a relationship expert. I'm saying this as someone who's fucked up enough so much that he picked up a book on it. And I remember, yeah, it was a book on dating for dummies. And I was so confused. Like, that should have been my first red flag for myself. I was so confused on why the first chapter focused entirely on getting to know yourself. Like, I wanted shit like, okay, how do I know, you know, read techniques. Okay, she's crossing your legs while she's looking at you. That means she's trying to fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I want the page that tells me, how can I tell which chick is down the fuck and which one is not? No, the first chapter was dedicated on getting to know your own self. Like, some of us just come from family where what got passed on as love is probably dysfunctional, might be dysfunctional, shit like that. So that's really what I appreciate about this, about, like, it's going to be fucked up. There's going to be a lot of couples going through these exercises and realizing that their partners are failing. But what they really need to recognize is how, man, the reason you ended up with this partner in the first place is because they just mimicked everything you were taught someone who loves you is supposed to do. That's what's up. Bars. Okay, I'm proud of myself for this one. All right, okay. All right, B. Okay, let's get to the next one. Okay. sorry, I'm laughing at myself because I'm doing good on time. But this is where I usually like start tap dancing. Excuse me, touchdown dancing, and then waste more time talking or whatever. But okay, all right. Another segment I think I just quickly brushed on last week was Will Smith's apology to Chris Rock. Now, I'm not going to go, like, I'm kind of hoping you, I'm not going to cover the whole story, but, you know, the slap, you know, if you probably heard about how Chris Rock made a joke about Will Smith's wife. And I mean, you know, I'm on team. Yeah, shit was a little sensitive. Shit was insensitive. It was insensitive because it was one of those jokes. It's kind of like Chris Rock's got jokes about. Okay, first I want to start that Chris Rock is one of my favorite comedians that I idolize, and I am. My intention is not to be insensitive to what happened to Chris Rock's end, and it's not. Oh, he deserved it. But I'm just saying, on the list of jokes, like if. On the side, I can agree with the people who found it insensitive because it's kind of like Chris Rock's jokes about crackheads. Now, the thing is, yeah, sure, it's funny and whatever, right? But it's just one of those problems black people have that we're so used to being told that, hey, fuck you and your problems. Just the white man ain't trying to hear about it. You know, when it comes to your problems, the only value it has to us is if we can find comedy in there. So, yeah, so, I don't know, talking about alopecia, it was just one of those things that, whatever, I'm not saying Chris Rock was intentionally trying to be hurtful, but I'm just saying I agree with the notion of the joke being insensitive. You found it funny. I didn't find it funny. I just found it okay. Not only did it, okay, when I initially heard it, I've got, okay, because she's got a bald head. But then when you throw in the context of alopecia, then I was like, ooh, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever. But with that said, Chris Rock made a joke. Will Smith got up and slapped him on the white man's TV at the Oscars. And he went back to see, and it was awkward moment, because, and I remember watching Chris Rock going, all right, I'm not going to do it, whatever. And, you know, Will Smith was yelling, keep my wife's name out your motherfucking mouth. And I guess the story just like has people split. Now, this was one of those things, like when I saw that, Will Smith handled it one way, but when I saw Chris Rock didn't respond to the slap, I mean, like he didn't go on the radio like Tupac would have had it. Yeah, man, fuck you, I'm gonna kill your mom. I'm a bum, motherfucking Philly. And and LA, wherever you at, the Bell Street, Bel Air, yeah, whatever. I chose to do what Chris Rock did, and you know, I wanna hear from these two men. I wanna hear their perspective. Fuck the comments, fuck everyone else's opinion, because everyone had a take. Everyone looked at the situation and internalized it. They, I guess, me too, including me, and it just acted like, okay, the reason why Will Smith was right for doing it and Will Smith was wrong for doing it. Chris Rock deserved it or he didn't deserve it. Yada, yada. It was a whole bunch of exchanges. But in the end, I wanted to hear what these two men had to say about the situation. Now, I wasn't thinking, I hope they kiss up and make up. But I appreciated that Chris Rock took the mature move and says, I need some time to process this shit. With that said, what were my notes on this shit? What did I write? I said, so listening to the Chris Rock apology, excuse me, the Will Smith apology. Now, I should shout out the good people of Three Guys On podcast. This is me being kind to my favorite podcast, Three Guys On podcast. I mean, granted, they would want me to join their Patreon page, but this is me shutting them out. And if you're not listening to Three Guys On, then you should be listening to them because they're fucking hilarious. But, and they have some dope takes on subject. And the two people who run it is Randolph, and is it Kevin? No, not Kevin. Randy. Ah, fuck. Anyway, this is me being kind of my favorite podcast, man. Like, this, okay, look, man, two black guys were on it. No, one black, the other one's black and the other one is white. I don't know if he's from Iran, but whatever. Oh, my God, Focus B. Yes, Three Guys on podcast and they talked about it. And Randolph gave an interesting take on it that really escaped the whole, at first I thought he was like making a lot of unpopular opinions, things that I wasn't agreeing on until he admitted that he saw the situation through Chris Rock's eyes and not just Chris Rock's eyes, but through the eyes of someone who's used on being bullied, through the eyes of, he gets hit and he's surrounded by people who are like showing more sympathy to the aggressor than they are to, hey, I just got fucking punched, you know, and whatnot. So, and what I like about it, and I guess he was just saying how it bothered him at the end, how all the comfort was being shown to Will Smith and not to Chris Rock. Now, it was a little take, but, and then, and he's right. I think at the beginning, I completely forgot, despite me saying that I appreciated Chris Rock taking the time to find his thoughts and process what just happened and not just react immediately to the situation. But I did forget that a man was, like, I was focused on the insensitive joke. I was like sided with people who were like, yeah, man, I mean, you know, basically focused on the insensitive joke, but not taking the time to say, like, did Chris Rock actually, to focus on that, did he do anything that would warrant him to get hit? In my opinion, the answer is no. And this is, which brings me to the Will Smith apology. One, it felt sincere. Well, but before I continue, yeah, one, it felt sincere. You know, sometimes I wonder, do you think it's possible that, I don't know if you've ever been to a party and some motherfucker decides to shoot it up. And like, I wonder how, if they were forced, like, held to the same standard as Will Smith, and they were forced to apologize, would they be able to, like, be, well, look, man, I had to shoot up the party. I saw this motherfucker, his hands on my ex-girlfriend, and sure, she dumped me. Sure, it's like, sure, she wrote a song about it, comme je me semblais de rien, but yo, the man had his hand all over my ex-girlfriend, so I had to shoot up the club and him. Actually, I was aiming for him, but I missed, so I ended up shooting the club, and everything's over. So, yeah. So, I guess what I like about part of Will Smith's apology is how he came from, he acknowledged that, hey, it's not just Chris Rock that I just punched. I fucked it up. Whatever's going on inside me, I fucked it up for everyone. I believe Questlove was in the middle or was after he was receiving, oh no, he was in the pro, he was about to receive an award. I forget what it was, but that punch, everyone focused on it. Like, I had forgotten Questlove. Everyone's so focused on Will Smith. Will Smith did some fuck shit. Like, you know, and what I like about it is you don't need to tell him that. He acknowledges it. Yeah, he fucks it up. And one of my favorite lines. Look, man. part of why I'm making a big deal about his apology is because whether you believe it's sincere or not, this is just my take on it. But one thing I like about this apology is because it's so fucking rare. Usually when people apologize, it's usually like, get over it, or I apologize, now you guys have to forgive me. It's like an example of how to apologize. And my favorite part in there is, he says, okay, I'm paraphrasing this part. He goes, regardless of how I felt in that particular moment, regardless of whether I was the one who felt disrespected by that joke, regardless is I wanted to stand up. I felt the need to stand up for black women. After you made that joke, regardless of how I felt, I did not handle that situation properly. So he regrets the punch. He regrets his action, and it's trying to handle the situation where he's not trying to realize, yeah, I'm a piece of shit for what I did. And, like, look, man, I guess I could connect to the idea of not being able to forgive yourself for fucking up. Like, I can relate to, like, it's happened to me where I punched a friend of mine. Like, you know, we ended up actually being best friends later. But, yeah, I ended up punching a friend of mine because I was in a bad place. He made a joke. He threw a french fry at me. But the state of mind that I was in that particular time, I was like it was like the straw that broke the camel's back. This person was just egging me on and whatever. Like, not to say that, you know, justify, but I'm just saying I was in a bad place that even the dumbest joke would have set me off. And once he did that, and I remember I punched him. But I remember when I punched him, it wasn't like a controlled behavior. After doing it, I remember looking at myself and thinking, what the fuck just happened? And I just knew how I had a temper issue and how how all my attempts to present myself as being a good kid, son of a pastor, and it could just take one moment to fucking ruin it all. One moment of lack of self-control. Like, all that is the reason why, by the way, is I ended up in going into therapy. But with that said, yeah, it's interesting how I can relate. I'm not a violent person, but I can relate to Will Smith losing control. And especially towards the end of the apology, he talks about how he says, to all the people, what do you tell the people who tell you that you let them down? And he says, yo, that's his big trauma in life. Like, that's his biggest fear in life, letting people down. And as a son of a pastor, yeah, I'm used to having to presenting an image like, not that I have all my shit together, but I'm a good guy. I was like worried about people finding out about, hey, my drug habits, my porn habits, or what I do when the lights are closed, when no one's around and things like that. Like, you know, but my thoughts and actions were two separate places. And last one is the final part in his apology. He says, if you hang on, I promise we'll be able to be friends again. Now, I'm saying all this because I remember talking to a friend about the Will Smith slap, and They didn't want to hear shit about what he had. To them, he was an asshole who doing some asshole shit. It's possible. I don't know. All I know is, because, you know, for all I know, it Will Smith is like had some team to write this shit up. And then, you know, because celebrities, you don't know what to believe when it comes to the celebrities. And he's got a movie coming out and now he's doing. Look, I'm choosing to believe, even though this friend might think I'm being naive, I'm choosing to believe homeboy is being sincere. Look, man, I ain't got a lot to hang on to in this fucking life. And I'm just, you know, I can be a very negative person. And this is one moment I'm choosing to be like, I think homeboy's trying to be sincere. Like, I guess I need to believe Will Smith is being sincere and he fucked up and he's trying to climb out of the hole that he put himself in. Now, does he deserve our forgiveness? That's a case by case incident. It is fucked up what happened to Chris Rock. I'm really, because Chris Rock has always been like a mature human being, like wise and shit. He's not perfect, like, you know. I remember reading an article about him. Actually, my therapist put me onto this. An article about how he's doing therapy. What did he say? Twice a week? In a week. Twice a fucking week. Of course, it must be nice to have money. But he's working through some things. And it's funny, when I'm listening to his joke, he sounds like a great guy. But who knows? Maybe he's got some traits in him that that makes you want to fight him. I don't know. Whatever, okay? I don't know, Christopher. But one thing I do appreciate about him is he's also a mature adult. And it's going to be interesting the way he decides to handle, whether he accepts his apology or whether he rejects it. I am very curious to see how he handles it. But so far, look, Chris Rock is not in the, like, doesn't need to be to accept his apology. Because, yo, that's kind of fucked up what Will Smith did. It's kind of fucked up. It is fucked up. All right, yeah. And shout out, I don't know if I said a shout out to Will Smith, but I'm happy to see him put out this sincere apology. I guess I love seeing grown men acting like grown men. It kind of reminds me of that time where, when I read about, I wasn't at the concert, but when I read about Nas and Jay-Z shaking hands after their, because they had a serious beef with each other on record, and then they decided to squash the beef. And to me, that was like a powerful moment, because, you know, it was just showing, look, man, you're going to have to learn how to apologize. You're going to have to learn how to say sorry. And this was just one of a great example of it. All right, B, let's move on along. Okay, so what else I had on there? I'm not going to, I can talk a lot about this one. It goes, House of the Dragon, star Steve Toussaint. No, he's not Haitian. I looked it up. He's from, where is he from? Oh, he's one of them Brits. He's a Brit. Response to Fire and Blood readers who can't stomach his casting. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole article.
Because other than, as we spoke about yesterday, other than...
Oh, shit. Okay, there is a clip. Okay, I don't like reading. All right, so I'm just going to play this video clip of Steve Toussaint, I guess, sharing his thoughts on, I think so. Okay, I'm just looking for a caption. I'm just going to play it. I think he's...
Because other than, as we spoke about yesterday, other than certain people's viewpoints... about someone who looks like me playing this part. It hasn't really played a part in the role, in my experience on the job with my fellow actors. As I said, there are people outside who find it a little hard to stomach that someone who looks like me would play this part, but that's an issue they have to deal with. I don't have to.
Bars, bars, bars. Okay, look. Because I grew up with white people, I know what's going on for their fucking head. It's like, oh man, politically correctness going out of muck. Like, hey man, look, I'm all for giving you fucking colors, you color, whatever you want to call yourself, Afro-Canadian-American, a fucking free chant, you fucking freeloaders. Nah, but not at the risk. Like, apparently in the actual book, it's never meant, his race is never mentioned. Or in the original source of this documentation, the character that Steve Toussaint is going to play in House of the Dragon is never mentioned. I guess, or maybe it was clearly obvious that he was a white guy. But for whatever reasons, the creators chose to make him a black character. And here's the important part. George R.R.R. Martin, the fucking guy who wrote the book, okayed that decision. Now, I don't like getting freebies from white people. I don't believe in symbolic rewards from white people. But to me, maybe one of the reasons the creators decided it's like, we want Be Black to forgive us for season 8 of Game of Thrones. We want Be Black to be... I'll be honest with you. I'm fucking curious. I was getting ready to neglect this Game of Thrones series. Actually, I'm still telling myself that, like, to me, Game of Thrones is like the girlfriend I refuse to forgive. Because that last season was like, it just broke my heart. I remember forcing myself to believe it was good and then finally accepting, yeah, no, they fucked us, man. The writers fucked us. And it was like, there was 8 years building up to the end. Because, yeah, you were just, it was 8 years of constantly, oh, shit's about to go down. And when finally shit goes down, one letdown, man. It's like, man... like, ladies, imagine you're gonna have sex with a man and he tells you he's got 12 each penis and he shows up, he's got a 3 each penis. You know what I mean? You'd be let down. I don't know. You know what I mean? Fellas, imagine whatever. Okay. What I'm saying is the last season was a fucking letdown. And then I was getting ready to say fuck anything Game of Thrones except for the original source or whatever YouTube commentary. But when they decided to make a black character, to add a black character in there, it made me curious. Not because he's black. This ain't an Obama moment. This ain't we got a black president or we got a black character in Westeros. No, not about that. What I'm curious to know is how they treat the notion of race in this season. What I think is going to happen is because this is like medieval time. And back in those days, race didn't have the same importance as it does to us now. Like, you know, race right now, it's like a big part of your identity. It's what makes you. It's like 5 feet tall, rich, and you're black. You know what I mean? Skinny and like weenie. Hey, the person you're talking to, like when I'm listening to a story, I need to hear the race of the people you're talking about so I can make the established proper context. So I'm interested on seeing how in this world of dragons, Dungeons and Dragons, of sorceries, of war, and a series of politics, how they're going to treat race in there. And I won't be surprised if they just treat race the same way race has been treated in during the medieval time, which is, it's nothing. It's like, whatever. I won't be surprised if they make a joke about, hey, look at that big black motherfucker, and they're talking about a black horse. They're not the black guy. So, I don't know. Like, you know, it's... I'm just curious at this point. And if they fuck it up, then yeah, I will join the white people, clans, mafia, saying, yeah, fuck you for using that. If they fuck it up, then yeah, I will join the mob. If not, but until then, I'm just curious. Let them try something, and I'm going to let them try something. So shout out to Steve Toussaint for sending a middle fingers to the haters. All right, okay, I'm getting close to wrapping this up. What did I put for random thoughts? Okay, this one is a quick one. I'm just going to say, I just had a thought that hit me. It said, you don't have to believe in God or be married. And the reason why this hit me is because I was raised on the notion that you have to believe in God. That's what life is all about. And you have to be married. And then it hit me that, yo, man, whether you choose to believe in God or not, shit is going to happen. If there is a God, it's the God of shit happens. That's what controls things. And same for... I bring this up because the getting married is because I keep having these argument with my parents, and I'm trying to get them to, it's not just my parents, but there's a lot of people who believe that, look, part of life is being married. Like, they were talking about one of my cousins, it's like, oh, she still hasn't found someone yet. I'm like, found someone yet? She doesn't have to. And they don't understand that. To them, it's like, it's like first grade, second grade, all right? Now you're in high school. After high school, you got a job. Now that you have a job, you're fucking married. And to them, it's, if you're not married, you're not a fulfilled human being. And he tells me this right after telling me about one of his church members who found out that her husband had a secret family outside the country. And the story broke my heart because I knew this church member, and like, man, this woman like struggled. She was trying to raise a kid while this motherfucker was, you know, outside the country. And she used to, you know, wake up bright and early in the morning to during the winter times to travel, like to go from Orleans to Canada. I mean, for you people in big cities, that's nothing, but it's like a probably 20-30 minute drive. Oh, if you're taking the bus, that's like an hour plus minute, whatever, to make ends meet. That's what I'm just saying. That's the whole point. And then finally she gets with her husband only to realize this motherfucker had a secret family. What kills me about it is that, yo, the poor woman just wanted a husband. Just wanted a husband like everyone told her she needed to have. And she gets a husband and she ended up having a motherfucker with another family. With a secret family. Look, all I'm trying to say is, look, don't force people to have a marriage, man. If you need to work on yourself, work on yourself. Maybe your objective in life is your fulfillment in life is figuring out the generational curse that were passed on down to you and whatnot. Yeah, I'm just, anyways, yeah. It's, look, you don't have to believe in God. You don't have to be married. Because anyway, life's going to be a bitch to all of us. All right, okay. Last part. This came to me while listening to an episode of... Actually, I didn't listen to all of it. It's like Kevin Hart has a line. He says, my therapy is me. He was just saying this on this podcast called The Pivot. And it's with these three NFL... I'm not sure if they're ex-NFL players. And it's whatever, man. You know, don't get me wrong. I didn't go through the podcast for the wisdom. It's more the reason I was listening to this episode is because I was listening to a segment where Kevin Hart was making fun of one of the hosts on the show who was trying to explain to him how he was how him and his wife going to a nudist beach. Yeah, you know, what do you call that? Yeah, nude beach or nude resorts where everyone gets naked. And the way the homeboy introduced the subject is he didn't clearly read the rule that he was dealing with a comedian, because you can see the look on Kevin Hart's face. It's like, okay, this dude is just giving me comedy gold. And the more he talked, the more he just kept digging himself down a hole. And then, yeah, Kevin Hart ended up roasting him for it. Now, the reason that segment got my attention because it reminded me of all the times where I tried to bring up a subject with someone. Like, you know, I want to talk about the lyrics about Semblant de Rien, about a song called Semblant de Rien by a French-Canadian artist named Linda Lemay. And the person I'm talking to, instead of focusing on why I'm talking about the subject, would just focus on the fact that I'm a grown-ass man listening to love music and getting roasted for that. Now, I am not dissing Kevin Hart for that, for roasting the guy, because I made sure to watch the whole podcast to get a context of why he roasted the guy. Because at first, yeah, I thought it was, you know, it was like, come on, man, let him finish the story while he's making me laugh. But it turns out that, no, the way the episode started, these guys were already breaking each other's balls, and the guy was already making short jokes with Kevin Hart, and Kevin Hart is not the type to like back down from a fight. So yeah, so he got that nigga started, but that's not the point. That's not my my point. I'm just trying to bring up the line when Kevin Hart says, my therapy is me. And he's just talking about when he reached a point in this comedy where he was just doing like self-deprecating joke and talking about real shit going on in his life. And the reason why that line hit me, because it made me think about how at the beginning of the show, I said, I don't know what to tell you about my week. And the truth is there's a lot of shit that I can talk to you about, but it all relates to my work. And I don't want to talk about my work. I don't want to talk about the people I work with and shit like that. There's a lot of things I could say, but it's been on my mind. But I don't want to talk about it because I act like I'm pretending like they might hear this episode, and I don't want anyone to feel like, oh shit, I'm being attacked or whatnot. But it is something significant going on with my life. Like I told myself, this podcast is, I'm just going to keep it real. And And what I do on podcasts better be what I do on in my work life. Like, people shouldn't hear my podcast and be surprised that, oh, I didn't realize Be Black felt this way about me. With that said, Kevin Hart's line, therapy is me. Wait, is that what he said? My therapy is me. It's being, oh my God. The actual line is, my therapy is being me. On this podcast, what's therapeutic about it is me being my authentic self. At work, I'm realizing I haven't figured out how to be my authentic self with people. I'm the people pleaser kicks out. The not trying to start, like, being the one black guy in a room full of white people. I'm not trying to bring on more attention to myself than I need. I'm trying to be skillful, trying to be helpful. I am not trying to rock the boat. I'm starting to do shit like standing up for myself, like, you know, not taking shit from people. But I'm starting to consider the possibility that my work environment might be a toxic environment, and so toxic that being yourself doesn't work out too well. Anyway, more to be continued, but that line by Kevin Hart saying, my therapy is being me, just made me realize how much I enjoyed comedy, why I enjoyed comedy, because it was the one moment I allowed myself to be myself. And this is why I used to hate when coworkers who I made the mistake of telling that I was doing comedies, and coworkers who would joke about showing up to my shows and fucking up, you know, and heckle me or do things to ruin my show, how they didn't realize, like, if it wasn't for the fact that I was civilized, I would stab you in your throat, because on that stage, I'm being me. I'm going for a therapy session, and you talking about interrupting my show is like interrupting my moment with my therapist. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, man. Like, when I'm at work, look, man, as far as I'm concerned, I compare myself to like a sex worker, man. Look, I'm being whoever these crackers need me to be. I'm doing all the tap dancing I need to tap dance, and then pay me on every second. And as long as you continue to pay me every second week, then look, Kevin Hart's quote just made me realize that at the moment, as it stands, I don't feel comfortable being my authentic self, and which is probably why I look forward to the end of the day or the weekend, because that's when I can be my authentic. Look, if I'm going to give any advice to the younger people looking on their career crest, A, is know thyself, and B, if you do find a job, more important, I mean, you know, if you value money over anything else, but if I had to do it again, I would make sure to find a job with a culture that's compatible with who I am. Like, I'm trying to imagine working that's my phone. You know what I mean? It's actually, yeah, anyway, yeah. I'm trying to imagine working in an environment and still wearing my PJs. No, working in a work environment and I can drop the N-word. I don't have to worry. Like, I'm kidding, but I'm saying, like, I can be my authentic self. It's not just a white person thing that I'm bringing this up. It's a work, like, you're trying to be a professional, but I noticed that there's some people when they're at work, who they are at work is the same as who they are outside of work. And that's liberating to me. I mean, I think, if I had a magic genie, my dream is for my next job that allows me to be my authentic self. And I'm going to stop there because I went over. I'm going to stop there with this was conclude today's episode. Wow. Oh, my God. By the way, it's kind of fucking warm in this room. I closed the window and the fan, and you can't see me, but I'm sweating like a priest at a Little League game. get it? All right, never mind. Okay. All right, so this concludes today's episode. Holler at me if you want to talk to me. Holler at me on Twitter at bblizak, B-B-L-I-Z-A-K. The website is shutuppodcast.com. And the email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And until further notice, use the RSS feed to subscribe to the site. Yes, I know there's a link to, there's a button to Spotify and to Apple, but those are just there for for to take up space. They're just there for aesthetics. But yeah, just use the RSS feed to subscribe to my podcast. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcasts.